62, C, 183. The quintessential Gnostic vision is not that our world is a prison or that the Creator is insane and hence our world is. The quintessential vision is optimistic. The luminous messenger has come here and is here invisibly to rescue, save us. Thus, we pass over from paranoia and negativism to soteriology, the real gnosis. Valis, then, is not about Gnosticism. It is an instance of the gnosis itself. It is what it describes, hence self-authenticating. I find myself totally convinced by it. Valis is not about our condition. It is about the rescue from our condition, and hence is a valid Gnostic revelation, indubitably. This is not a book by someone who has read about Gnosticism or knows about it. This book is a Gnostic experience recorded. Gnostic soteriology itself. Suddenly, the book throws aside its wraps. It is not about mental illness at all. It is an account of the Gnostic soteriological reality here, normally invisible in our world. Our irrational world has been penetrated from outside. One could make up a novel in which the fallen categories of Gnosticism are shown because, as Heidegger says, these are, in fact, the conditions and happenstance that we do find ourselves caught in. But the soteriological elements are something else because, by definition, Gnostic definition, they are transmundane, supernatural in the purest, most absolute sense, and hence play no role in the quasi-Gnostic modern existential systems. Thus, I could have in Valis pondered the irrationality of world, its prison-like nature, etc. But there would have been no mention of Valis, nor could there have been. Suppose, however, upon reading about Gnosticism, I had elected to make up a soteriological element. But then we would have had a genuine fallen component and a fictitional soteriological element, the two not in any way joining to form a coherent whole. One would truly pertain to world and world experience, Dasein. The other would be a patent fabrication, merely imaginative, and hence a grotesque anachronism, playing no role in the lives and experience, worldview, and thinking of contemporary man. The result would be absurd. The most critically valid aspects of human existence would be juxtaposed with bizarre fantasy, and, worst of all, the latter would be introduced to solve the former, with the bitter result that the former, man's throne and fallen Dasein, would seem just that much more hopeless. However, the problem, Verfallenheit, and soteriological solution are in Valis a seamless whole. One must either accept both or reject both. They are indivisible. Now, an ignorant reader rejects both as madness, but this is a faulty solution. He does not know enough practically and theoretically to understand that the former, Verfallenheit, cannot be dismissed. The problems stated by Fat and which he seeks to solve and understand. But the wiser reader, in facing the reality of Fat's questions and problems, because that reader knows of Heidegger and existentialism in general, now must confront the soteriological solution presented in Valis and consider what it may mean. Here he draws a blank, for as Galbraith pointed out, we have absolutely no vision or concept of belief in a transmundane deity. We understand the problem but see no solution. This is either nihilism or leads to it. What, however, if the soteriological theme in Valis is taken to be as real as the stated problems? This, the reader knows, is impossible. The appeal to his assent can't be responded to, because the reader knows the problems to be unanswerable. This intractability of the Verfallen situation is his, as an existentialist, fundamental article of faith. He not only knows that the situation is real, he also knows that by its very nature it cannot be rectified. True honesty and courage and integrity require that he take this implacable stand of confronting the is qua is. To start supposing transmundane intervention undoes the very basis of moral values built into his realization. That it is a hopeless situation, and that he faces this absolutely. Thus, to him, Valis is more dangerous than it is to a more ignorant person, who is able to deny or ignore the problems raised as insane, morbid, or self-indulgent. Valis is dangerous because upon stating the problem in a modern way, it thereupon draws on a solution so absurd and obsolete that it, the solution, seems to insult the integrity of the very person able to perceive the reality of the problem. Valis, then, aims at the most modern and sophisticated reader, and then presents him with a solution as foolish as the problems stated are real. What he does not see is that Valis is written backward. From solution, soteriology, to problem, Verfallenheit. The author is stipulating the problem only to account for the existence of the solution. He has reasoned back from the soteriological experience to the problem. He knows the solution firsthand and infers the problem using it as his premise. Valis, then, only seems to be an existential work. In reality, it is a Gnostic gospel. Note: there is no way to overestimate or repeat enough this exegetical fact. For Dick, writing and reading are the privileged modes of the mystical life. Writing and reading are his spiritual practices. His is a mysticism of language, of logos, of the text as transmission, of the SF novel as coded Gnostic scripture. The words on the page, on his late pages at least, are not just words. They are linguistic transforms of his own experience of Valis. They are mercurial, shimmering revelations. They are alive, and weirdest of all, they can be transplanted into other human beings, that is, into you and me, via the mystical event of reading. Here, in this most stunning of Dick's notions, the cheap SF novel becomes a Gnostic gospel, words become viral, reading a kind of mutation, and the reader a sort of symbiote. JJK. Endnote. 62. C. 192. Cease to run from your death. Turn and face it and make it yours. Eigen. Your own. Not the it, fremd, of others. When you do this, time, the past and the future, collapses into the present. There is only the now. Dasein. This death is now, spiritually and ontologically. For in making it yours, you seize it and master it and assimilate it to you, not you to it. This world is radically transformed and becomes as if you. This is the seizing fate by the throat that Beethoven spoke of. It is the epitome of the heroic, not the tragic. It is, in fact, the heroic replacing the tragic. Destiny is your victim, not your master. You are the craftsman, it the artifact. This is the topic of Wagner's Ring, the gods against fate. In it, the gods lose. Thus, tragedy wins. It need not be so, not for the creative artist. The great confrontation worthy of man is between tragedy, the classic and Greek victory by fate over man, and the heroic, modern and Faustian, the victory of man over fate. And this is achieved by collapsing time and space and meeting death now, on your own terms, seizing it, not it you. You die, but it is your death, not death imposed on you in violation of your nature. It is a logical outcome of what you are, not what world and fate are. He who can do this has won where in the ring the gods lost. 62, C. 194. I survived 2374 and wrote about it in and as Valis, and hence made my death my own. By living long enough to write about it, that is, I artistically and creatively depicted my own death, and this is the victory of the heroic over the tragic. This is what Beethoven did. I have done it, and nothing can change this. But if I hadn't written Valis, even if I had lived on past 2374 for decades, this would not be the case. It was not the surviving 2374, but the writing about it that gave the victory to the heroic over the tragic, as with Bob Fosse in All That Jazz. It is Oedipus or Beethoven. The antique Hymarmony wins tragedy over the creative human warrior wins the heroic. This is the past, Greek, versus the modern world, the Faustian. I chose the latter in 2374, and Valis is the proving of my choice and my victory. I willed it, and I accomplished it. To do it, I had to seize world, collapse time, devour my own death, as if Zagros ate the Titans. 62, C. 197. Who would guess that the heroic would enter the world as the meek sacrificial lamb? This is not an orthodox Christian secret. It is Manichaean. But this, like the kingdom itself, is indeed how the heroic drives out the tragic. It is a strategy that fools all. 62, C. 201. Viewed this way, Christianity, and especially Gnosticism, represents the great revolution in human history that divides the ancient world of fatalism, which included the Greeks, from the modern world of the heroic, even when the heroic is disguised as sacrifice. For this is how it, the heroic, enters the world, as the lamb, i.e., sacrifice. 62C, 203. The weapons of power, coercive physical power, lose because they inevitably encounter some adversary more powerful. The only real victory can occur by being conquered, as bait, sacrifice, swallowed by evil, and then coming into being at the center of evil. And this is precisely what true Christianity in secret has done. Thus it is subversive and invisible, and at the center of power in its disguised form, mimesis. Evil poses as good. Good is invisible within it, unknown to it, i.e., to evil, the BIP. All this is taught in the Tao Te Ching. Oddly, this is how the Tao works, a perturbation in the reality field. Note: another defeat is victory paradox. Though Dick does not seem to have made the connection himself, these statements are reflective of Martin Luther's theology of the cross, the idea that God conceals his glory within the humiliation of the crucifixion. Compare Luther's notion with, for example, Dick's earlier statement in the exegesis that the deity will be where least expected and as least expected, 16:14. Here there is an added level of complication, with the evil in which good hides itself pretending to be good. A classic example of the Dickian fake. GM. Endnote.